recording this computer. Okay, thank you guys. I think we've just gone live. Good evening all, and thank you very much for joining me to this, one of our first BACC and Scientific Committee recording. My name is Karen. I am the Conference Director for the BACCN, and I'm here with some of our Scientific Committee members and some of the board members. So if you just as a collective unmute yourself and just say a quick hi to everybody out there.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi everybody.
I just want to say thank you to them for giving up their time to help me with this. And the aim of this recording is to talk about abstract submission for Conference 2020, which will take place in Nottingham next year. We've just come back from a site visit yesterday, and it's a fantastic venue, and we're already very excited and well underway in getting our conference program sorted. As you know, we changed the abstract submission and the categories last year already, and we thought we'll put together a bit of just some top tips from the Scientific Committee. If you're thinking about writing an abstract, we'll give you a hand, we'll give you an idea of what we're looking for when we're reviewing abstracts. And it's ultimately making a better conference for you as the delegates, and a better experience for you if you're submitting an abstract. So we're going to get underway. I've divided the Scientific Committee talking each about a separate part of the abstract submission. So we're going to go through audit, service evaluation, if you're putting an education abstract in, whether you're doing a clinical vignette or a case study, there's something for everybody. So without further ado, I'm going to kick off with David. Good evening, David. And David is going to talk us through what we're looking for in an abstract with regards to audits, service evaluation, or a practice development project. So David, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you, Karen. This is one of my personal favourite sort of types of abstract submission. It's a really sort of applied, practice-focused, patient-focused type of abstract. And it always gets my attention when I'm at conference. I just thought it would be useful, first of all, just to talk through these different types of abstracts within this category, because there are four distinct types, and they all are quite different in their own ways. And sometimes there can be a bit of confusion about what's an audit and what's a service evaluation. And I've also got some examples that I thought might be useful just to help illustrate these different types of sort of practice-facing abstracts that are actually from last year's conference. So example of past abstracts.
Yeah.
So I guess to start off with, one really quite nice type of abstract are audits. So I think this is a really nice, perhaps a good way to have your first conference presentation. You know, audits are quite a common part of our practice within critical care. Whether it's something as simple as doing hand hygiene audits or infection prevention audits. An example that I've seen from a recent conference was somebody presenting their results from a Trachycare bundle audit. Something that they were responsible for within their ICU, and they were presenting this in poster form. So you know, it's about measuring practice within your unit against a set sort of guideline or a set standard
best
operating procedure.
Yep.
So care bundles are a good example of that. So you're auditing something that is against a guideline to make sure that practice is being followed.
I think one of the first presentations I ever did was a poster presentation, and it was an audit that we did on our sepsis care bundle many years ago. And that was, I think, the very first poster I had ever presented at a conference.
And you know, this is the kind of activity that many of us are involved with in the clinical setting. So this is data that perhaps you might be gathering if you're in a link nurse role. So you know, why not do something with that data and have a go at presenting and sharing the good work that's happening in your unit. Another sort of subtype of abstract within this category is service improvement.
Yeah.
And I think a good example of this was a session that I sat in at our recent conference in Edinburgh, our 2019 conference. And this was a presentation that was delivered from a trust that were doing a big bit of service improvement surrounding maternal critical care. And they did a big sort of bit of work where they redesigned some of their care delivery within their maternity hospital. I think they recognized that there were women that were needing higher levels of care post-delivery or pre-delivery. And there were situations where new mothers were being moved to ICU and their baby was staying maybe in a NICU setting and away from mum. So there was a big move to try and bring to keep mum actually in the maternity setting where they were being cared for by the teams that need to be looking after them. And they upskilled a lot of their midwifery team in sort of high dependency type care. And this was a session actually that sharing some of this experience and sharing this example of service improvement. And they talked a bit around some of the background, some of the business case behind it. But I think more importantly, they also evaluated that and they fed back actually how that service improvement had developed. There was a lot of discussion about the learning, collective learning that happened within that organization and some sort of recommendations and some tips for people that were listening to that session that might want to mirror that service improvement within their trust. So it was, again,
sorry to interrupt, David, but I just wanted to say, I think that's a really important part of the service improvement projects that sometimes people can miss. There's a lot of innovation that often goes on in critical care or many other departments, and yet quite commonly people forget to take a step back and say, how well did we do that? How do we know whether or not it was successful or not? Which parts worked, which parts didn't work? And what would we recommend to others? How would we recommend others should change it for the future? So I think what you're saying there is really important thing for people to remember when they're submitting their abstract for that category.
Does anybody else have examples of service improvement presentations they've seen that have worked?
One of the very first presentations I ever did at a conference was following the setup of a nurse-led intensive care follow-up clinic, looking at exactly as Suzanne's just mentioned, but did it work? Was it set up right? What changes would have made an improvement to that? What went well? What didn't work well? And how would we recommend that other trusts and other organisations rolled out a similar type of piece of work? So yeah, definitely, it's a really good category, really interesting one to listen to as well from an audience perspective.
Definitely, and I think there's so much good work goes on in the trust that we work in and in the ICUs, and this is a really good category to shout about it.
David, I think Amy wanted to share something.
Yeah, go
Amy,
for it.
Amy, if you just unmute yourself.
I just think it's really important to also kind of share the fact that a lot of universities now do their service improvements. There's a lot of students who are learning this that could also bring things like this to conference and put it in an abstract because they've had that support from the university as well. So my first service improvement that I did with my trust was actually through my university's input. And I think sharing that knowledge as well, with also the background of having a professional body supporting you, is really good to show the work that you've done at a university level as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really good point.
Yeah.
We're increasingly using service improvement instead of traditional dissertations now. So a lot of people will do that work for a particular university course. So why not use that and and have it published and bring it to conference for everybody else to hear about.
Yeah. I suppose one thing that I think I've seen in some of the abstracts that we reviewed last year was when people did submit service improvement projects, sometimes the methodology bit is missing, the sort of framework, you know, this obviously there's the model for improvement or various other models about how best to go about improvement work, and I would definitely do some sort of shout out for more around the methods.
Definitely. Yeah. I guess another related sort of sub type of abstract is those that relate to practice development projects. And I think sometimes there is a bit of a crossover between service improvement and practice development. Again, other examples that I saw from conference recently were a really good session about bringing children into the ICU to visit relatives. And it was a particular trust looking at that within their ICU and sharing some of the work that they were doing surrounding that aspect of care. So I don't think it was necessarily as big and developed maybe as a service improvement project, but it was still a really good example of how practice was being changed and improved.
I think people always think it has to be a major big project for all three categories, but actually it's just about sharing your experience and looking at one specific aspect of care, what that we deliver across the board for our patients, and what did you learn out of doing that audit or that service evaluation or something, so that the next group might learn from you and not either making the same errors or the same mistakes, or actually adopt some of the practice that you've discovered works really well. So it's a really valuable category within conference.
And sometimes it's not about the size of the project, it's about the level of creativity and innovation. Mm-hmm. And it might just be a really simple idea, but they've been particularly creative about it. Mm-hmm. So at the 2019 Edinburgh conference, one really memorable presentation I saw was about the safety huddles and how they'd implemented that, and they'd done it in such a lovely, creative way, engaging way, that kind of ensured that it happened. Lots of us are doing safety huddles, but it's just a simple idea, and it was just amazing, really well done.
I love the video that they did, it was hilarious.
And again, you know, Louise's example there of safety huddles, it's nice, simple idea that an area of practice that perhaps many of us are doing. And it's just a good, it's an opportunity to shout about it and share some of the good work that's happening. Just the last sort of subcategory within this practice facing area of abstracts, service evaluations. And again, there were some really good service evaluation presentations at our 2019 Edinburgh conference. And one that really stood out for me was a session looking at the use of restraint mitts in an ICU setting. And this was a bit of work that was led by, I think, one of the nurses on this ICU. And she wanted to get a sense of what was happening within this area of practice. So I think she gathered some data from paperwork retrospectively and also did some interviews with staff members. So she was able to sort of establish what was happening, what the current state of play was, but also to sort of develop maybe some recommendations or some areas for improvement. So again, really practice-facing, and some really, really sort of meaningful data was produced from it. I guess something to consider with this particular category is that often with service evaluations, you might be interviewing staff, you might be perhaps using a questionnaire, so that there's potentially an element of ethical consideration that might need to be looked at. So I guess with service evaluation, something that we'll be looking for within abstracts would be something around that. So, you know, have you pursued those sort of ethical interest processes? And also the methodology. So how have you evaluated? How have you got this data? How have you looked at this aspect of practice that you're evaluating?
Yeah. I think Catherine wanted to come in there. No, okay. Nope. I know the presentation that you're talking about with regards to the myths, and that was a dissertation for a master's program. So, you know, all of us are studying, but how many of those dissertations actually make it to a presentation or actually get written up as an article? So all this work, we're putting all this work in, and we just don't go that next step and actually share our findings with people. So I think you get to the end of your dissertation, you think, oh, thanks God this is done, I'm not touching that again, when actually we should be sharing this. Suzanne, you wanted to come in there?
Just to share a little anecdote, really. I was talking to some nurses in the trust where I work last year about their experiences of having done work-based projects as part of their degree. And one of them said to me, she said, it's such a shame. She said, I wrote 10,000 words and it's hidden in the back of the wardrobe, and the only person that's ever seen it and read it is my mom. And I just thought, that just reminded me of that when you were talking about that, and the fact that, you know, there's so much potential to share all of this good work, and yet often it does sit on the bookcase and gather dust or get filed somewhere never to be seen again. So
I think Catherine, hands up again.
It's not even just about getting people to do abstracts for conferences. They also sit in the corner on shelves, and they could be published into articles for our journal as well. So there's lots of good stuff out there that we could be using. So consider it, guys.
Yeah. David, anything else with regards to that kind of group of abstracts?
No. I think we've covered it nicely collectively. I just think it's a really, really nice area. It's a chance to share some of the work we're doing. So I think I'd really encourage anybody who's thinking about submitting an abstract in this category to go for it.
Yeah. And obviously, just to remind you, it can be a 20-minute oral presentation, or it can be a poster. Both of them are really effective ways of sharing your work, so please go for it if you're doing any of work. So I'm gonna hand over to Louise to talk about our education stream, which is something new that we started next year, and I kind of taken this from the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, the NTI conference in the States, where they do a humongous amount of education during that NTI conference. And I kind of wanted to bring a little bit of that to BACCN, but I'm going to let Louise talk about that, because she actually did one of our first education stream sessions in Edinburgh last year. So Louise, over to you.
Thank you. I love this stream because I just think it makes the conference so inclusive to everybody, because we're not all involved in research. Maybe we haven't recently done a service valuation or an audit, but anyone can teach anyone anything. We're all involved in mentoring students. We're all involved in supporting our colleagues, developing their competencies. So I love this stream because literally anyone can put in an abstract on this topic. All it has to be is an interesting topic that you think you've perhaps had experience of supporting students or preceptoring new starters in, that you think other people might be interested in too. And there are two types of education sessions. One is just called an education session, and that's formatted more as a lecture or a seminar, where it's sort of a bit of discussion. And then the other subtype is your workshop. And a workshop is designed to be very interactive, involving lots of group work, lots of activity, quizzes, demonstrations, maybe even a bit of simple simulation, but very interactive. Whereas the education session, it's bums on seats, lecture, maybe some discussion activities as well, but a bit more sedate, let's say. So when you're structuring this abstract, the first section should really kind of introduce the topic that you're going to talk about and maybe highlight why it's important, why you feel that you want to share this topic with your colleagues. So just for an example, maybe you want to do a topic on the fluid management of a critically ill patient, something fairly simple. Well, it isn't simple, it's anything but simple.
You know, it can be very controversial.
It's an everyday topic, it's something that all nurses do. So, you know, just explain in your introduction why that's important, why you feel you want to update your colleagues on this topic. And then the next bit, which is the most important bit, and I think it's the hardest bit actually to get right, is to write out the aim of your session and the learning outcomes. So remember, the aim of your session is your aim. So what are you hoping for the session to be? So in the example I was just using there, my aim would be to provide an update on current evidence relating to fluid management in the critically ill patient or the fluid resuscitation in a critically ill patient. And that is my aim for my learners. Then your learning outcomes is what you're hoping that your learners should achieve. So that's the bits that you're hoping the learner will take away with them. Now, your learning outcomes should be really smart. They should be specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-worthy. So a good tip, and it was one of my nursing colleagues who I worked with when I first qualified gave me this tip when I was doing my mentoring course. I'm going to share it with you. But if you start off your learning outcomes with, by the end of the session, the learner will,
that very famous sentence,
guide you to writing nice, smart outcomes. Yeah. And you should use nice, succinct descriptors. So things like, by the end of the session, my learner will be able to list causes of hypovolemia, discuss the NICE guidelines algorithm, describe the AMP of the heart, define cardiac output and stroke volume. So they should be very specific, measurable things. Those are quite simple ones, but you can extend it. Things like evaluate the evidence base relating to the use of balanced crystalloids, or analyze blood results in order to demonstrate correct choice of fluid. Something like that. So they should be very measurable and achievable and very specific. Once you've done that, then the last section really distinguishes whether your session is just a plain old education session or indeed a workshop. And if you're finding that what you're going to do is mostly presenting using maybe PowerPoint or some kind of visual media with a bit of discussion, then it will sit firmly in the education session. If you want to do group work, quizzes, demos, simulation, group activities, quiz sheets, worksheets, that will sit in your workshop category. So the next section is where you describe the exact activities that you're going to do, and you describe clearly what the goals of those activities are as well. Just a brief outline of how you're going to structure the session. And I think that's it for the abstract.
Yeah. Anne, you wanted to add something to that?
I just wanted to ask whether, because I'm just thinking that you might have had a particularly unusual case that you learnt a lot from, and would that be a good thing for an education, because that often stimulates you to find out about something you didn't know about.
Yeah, that to me is kind of it's a bit of a crossover between what Nikki is going to talk about with regards to a case study or a clinical vignette. And I think case studies and clinical vignette is quite new to a nursing conference. I don't think you see that very often. You see it a lot in medical conferences. And that's why I was keen to bring it in, because we deal with so many some interesting cases and things, but we never actually bring that. So I think the education stream is, for example, if you want to talk about, and I know in Edinburgh, one of our colleagues did one of the other sessions was about DKA. So, you know, you could talk about 12-lead ECGs, and it could range from basic new people in intensive care, new starts in intensive care, all the way to advanced practice kind of topics. And you just need to say at what level are you aiming it at.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a crossover between education and what Nikki is going to talk about. Suzanne, mm-hmm. you've got...
Yeah, I was just going to add really that, of course, whoever is going to be delivering the education may well draw on their own clinical examples yeah. of, for example, a case of DKA and use that in, as a sort as a of basis. Framework for yeah. the education session. So I agree there is a crossover, but I think if the overall focus is around teaching somebody how to manage a patient with DKA, but using a patient case as, to do that, then that would sit within education.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
David, you've got your hand up. Unmute.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, just a very quick point about thinking about the topic that you might want to submit under this educational abstract category. So I think it's really worthwhile thinking about, you know, what's going to be a topic that's going to appeal to the reviewers, scientific yeah. committee. What's going to be something that's going to appeal to your peers, the people you work with? What's the current big issue in your unit? Is there something that maybe needs demystifying? Is there something that you know really gets people talking in the coffee room at work? So I think you can be quite cunning and maybe pick something that will definitely attract the reviewers mm-hmm. and maybe pull in delegates if you're accepted.
I think the from David Sedley, from your experience, I think the Americans are really good at that at coming up with really catchy titles and a catchy way of talking about a subject. Mm. So I think we've got a lot to learn from them. Nikki?
Yeah, I was just going to say one of the really good examples for a workshop within that particular theme was the interpretation of chest x-rays.
Yeah.
Talking about demystifying something which people perceive yeah. to be really difficult. And a yeah. lot of NHS trusts will print you out a hard copy of your chest x-rays that you can bring along as part of that teaching resource to be able to share that and break into smaller groups and do some group work and make it into a real, what's the word?
Interactive.
Yeah.
I know you can, when you download an x-ray, there's a way of making sure that you don't have any patient identifiers and dates and times and things on it. There is a way of sharing the actual proper picture online without or maintaining patient confidentiality, which is clearly a big issue if we're talking about patient case studies and things like that. Louise?
No, I was just going to sort of say it's great to be really creative and to try to get that mass appeal, but actually don't shy away from the bread and butter of critical
ECGs.
Care.
Oh,
ECGs, ABGs. Because remember we're really lucky because the BACCN conference attracts a broad range of experience. So we get our new starters in ICU right through to the senior matrons. So the new starters may appreciate a refresher on blood gas analysis.
Equally, and students sometimes as well.
Students attend as well. And equally, you know, you tackle kind of leadership issues that might appeal to the more senior nurses. So kind of think across the broad spectrum of our skill mix. Frank, sometimes we could all, you know, even as a senior nurse, you always learn something new when you look at ECGs. I know I do. Blood gases, there's always more you could know. So don't be frightened to tackle those those kind of competency related issues, because that's what people want to know about, because that's what they're using in their day-to-day jobs.
And actually this year I think we've put in that for especially your category that you're talking about, Louise, is actually matching it to the CC3N competencies. So that if you're coming to conference, you look at the abstract book, you can actually go, well, I still need some clarification on X, Y, and Z competency. And lo and behold, there's a session that matches that competency. So when you're writing the abstract, it's matching it to the CC3N competencies, which will help all our delegates.
Yeah, no, and that's what people want. They for revalidation purposes as well, and all those things. So be creative, be a bit wacky, but don't be frightened of just tackling the basics as well. Yeah. We need both, and both will be equally as popular, I'm sure of it.
Thank you, Louise. I think our next one is Suzanne, that is going to talk to us about, again, another new stream that we're putting in, and it's about primary research and presenting your literature review that we've all had to go through when we wrote our dissertations at various levels. Suzanne.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think it's really exciting because there are so many more nurses now that are engaged in the research process. And obviously now we've got an all graduate profession being taught, so many more nurses that actually have to undertake a piece of research or, as David talked about before, some sort of work-based project as part of their dissertation. So I think we are seeing more and more people wanting to submit an abstract around the work that they've done in terms of a project. Or indeed, most people, as you'll know, have to actually do a review of the literature for either their work-based project or a piece of research as a first stage, even if they're not doing it as their final dissertation. So I think there's definitely more and more work out there to be done. And I think this probably applies across the board to many of the different categories. But I think one of the things that we really need to think about is the fact that when you submit an abstract to conference, that actually that's all there is going to be. And often, you know, we publish abstracts in a book. We only see an abstract at the scientific committee. So it really matters what's in that abstract. When you're doing an abstract for your thesis or submitting an article, then you've got the rest of the article and the rest of the thesis to go and have a look at. It's just a snapshot of the work. But actually, this is the whole thing. So it's really important that we get it right. And we can only judge it on what's in that abstract. So I think that's probably true for a lot of the categories.
Yeah.
I really wanted to reinforce that. In terms of primary research and literature reviews, I think, again, some of that work is probably come, particularly if you're doing a master's or a PhD, from a very large piece of work. And actually, you can really only focus on a small element of that potentially for conference. Because if you try and present your whole PhD thesis, for example, then you're never going to do a very good job. It's going to come over as muddled, and you're never going to get all that in your abstract that allows only 300 words. So it's really important to actually look at the themes of the conference and to think about which angle of your work actually fits with the theme of the conference and write the abstract with that in mind, so that you're not going to present all of your results, but you might just be presenting a portion of them. So again, that's probably true for David's discussion around service evaluation work, but more so I think for research. In terms of the actual writing the abstracts, obviously we've got drop down headings now when you go into the abstract submission, and I think that's really, really helpful, because what we found before was that people struggled to structure the abstract in terms of how many words should you put in different parts and what do you need to include, what's most important. So I think really be guided by the actual topic headings and read what it says. So if it says background, then you need to think about what is the background to the study. Now, the background to the study is actually where you justify the importance of what you're doing. But it really should be the shortest part of the whole abstract. It should really be covered in just one or two questions. And I think thinking about last year when we reviewed a lot of the abstracts for research, actually, the large majority of the abstract was often the background. People would tell us all about the problem, and then there'd be a line at the end saying, and therefore we're going to present our results on X. But actually the background should be just one sentence or a couple of bullet points, so that actually you can focus more of the abstract on telling us what you've done and how you've gone about it and what your results are that actually matter, that are going to be important to conference delegates. You will need to very clearly state what the aim of the work is. And ideally, I think it's really helpful to state what the research question is. Whether you're doing a literature review or whether you're doing a primary research, state what your question is, because then you can think about how you're answering that question as you go through the abstract, both in terms of presenting your results or findings. You can say, this is the answer to my question. And also in terms of when you're thinking about what the implications for practice are, what are the implications of this, the answer to this question? Because another thing that I think can happen very easily is you get sidetracked. And sometimes you start out with an aim, and by the time you get to the results, you've got so much data and you want to put it all down there. And actually, you don't ever answer the question that you set out to answer, you set out with. So if you always keep that research question in your mind as you go through the abstract, that will take the reader with you. And it will make it much clearer for the Scientific Advisory Committee to see what you've done and the relevance of your results and findings. If we move on a little bit to think about the method, I think the first thing is about thinking about the difference between the design and the method. Quite often people miss out the design part and they just go on and say, oh, we recruited this many people, or sometimes they just go into the findings, particularly in literature reviews, and don't tell us anything about how the design of the review was. And literature reviews as well as research will have a design. For example, you know, was it a narrative review of the literature? Was it a scoping review of the literature? Was it a quantitative systematic review? Was it a qualitative evidence synthesis? There's a whole range of different designs now. So just state what your design was. And ideally, if you can, actually give a link to a framework or a reporting guideline or something like that. And then you haven't got to describe it in great detail because you have only got 300 words. Exactly, yeah, you do need to think about it. But it is important to get all those things, and then moving into methods, if you're thinking about, you know, what was your sample, and where did you do the work, what databases did you search if you're doing a literature, for example. But also the other bit that often people miss out is, how did you analyse the data? So if that's a primary research study, let's say it was a qualitative study, what method did you use to pull all those data together? Was it a thematic analysis or was it a content? You know, you need to state what it was. Similarly, if you're doing a literature review, you also need to tell us that bit. How did you bring all of those findings together? And that in my experience is often missed. So do remember to keep that bit in. I don't know if anybody else wants to add anything up until that point before I move on.
Oh, Anne. Just unmute yourself, Anne.
I'm trying to unmute yourself. Just a thought, really. Say there's someone who's maybe starting out on a research project or starting out on a literature review, and they think, oh, I should have it done by a conference, but I'm not quite there at the moment. And, you know, so is it still okay for me to put in an abstract? Is there any advice for those sorts of people?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up in terms of results, actually. So thank you. That's a really nice link to that. And we do understand that often people will put in abstracts for conference because obviously there's timelines for conference. You need to get it in and you might be collecting your data now, but the conference isn't going to be for some time. So sometimes you can't actually write what the results are. But we would definitely want, there's an expectation that you will have your results and you will have done some degree of analysis of those results by the time that conference is actually happening. So if you haven't got all your results when you submit the abstract, you need to tell us where you are and you need to give us some confidence that you will have those data, even if you haven't got a complete analysis done, that you've got some preliminary results that you will be sharing with us at conference, because otherwise it's probably a little bit too early to be submitting the abstract. And we all know what it's like when you're doing any project, particularly when you're working as well, timelines slip. Sometimes that's completely outside of your control. And so we need to have some degree of confidence that it's likely that you're going to have some results to present.
Catherine?
And I think just following on from what Suzanne said, we have turned abstracts down in 2019 for that very reason, that the work hadn't been finished and there was no results. And it was almost as if they'd put their abstract in a whole year too early. So one of our bits of feedback was come back next year with more information. So that's really important.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we've now... We're planning 2 years in advance already. So I'm already working on 2022's conference. So if you think that you're not going to make this year's deadline, which is the 31st of March, there's always next year or the year. Well, I say next year. I already get confused because we're at the end of the year. There's 2022, which is going to be in Belfast.
That's scary, Karin.
I like to be prepared. So if you think you're not going to make the deadlines for abstract or not maybe have your data by the time we hit conference in September, there's always the next year. So come this year, see what it's all about, and then present the year after that. Anything else, Suzanne?
Not too much, really. I suppose just thinking about the last section, which is entitled on the abstract format, Implications for Practice, and that's true for both primary research and the literature reviews. Really, really important to think about that. And it's just not a repeat of your results or findings, but it's to think about, what's the point of what I've done here? What's the relevance of it to my colleagues? Why does it matter to other nurses, other healthcare professionals? What's the message? What's the take-home message that I want to share with people in terms of what they should go away from conference and do? Maybe it might be something about them testing it out in their own area of practice, or going back to their own protocols and reviewing their protocols to see what their protocols say in relation to the area. But I think it's also important to think about what the findings might mean in terms of wider policy and future research as well. So your study might have been a very small study. It might have been a pilot study, so you might be recommending that other researchers might look at it in with a wider group, maybe across a number of different sites, or from a different perspective. Maybe if you'd looked at patients' perspectives of their experience in intensive care as a patient, you might suggest that actually somebody might want to look at relatives' perspectives as well to add to the evidence base. So again, keep it succinct and keep it focused on what your question was, but remember those sort of three areas. What does it matter to practitioners? What does it matter to policymakers? And what does it matter to researchers, I would say.
And I think this is a fantastic category to really encourage nurses to take part in research. I think there's a lot of research nurses out there, but we all do medicine studies or drug studies or things. And I think this is a fantastic opportunity to take that leap and actually do our own nursing research, which is just as important and valid to our patients and families and our colleagues, as opposed to the medical studies that happens so frequent
I think you're absolutely right. I suppose one thing that I would just echo that David said earlier that becomes even more important, obviously, when you're doing primary research is the need to get appropriate ethical approval or HRA, Health Research Authority approval, depending on the type of your study. And definitely within the abstract, we would want to see evidence that you had got the appropriate approvals, because we would, just like in a publication, we could never accept a publication that didn't have the right ethical approval numbers. We couldn't present that data at conference either. So really important that that is stated in the abstract.
And just a plug for our link to the NHIR, Suzanne, on our website, if you just want to highlight that.
Yeah, so we are a non-commercial partner of the National Institute of Health Research, which means that actually if you do want to do a piece of research and you want to apply for funding via the BACCN, if your study does meet the criteria, and there are a number of criteria that you can look at on the website, then your study could potentially be listed as an NIHR portfolio study, which actually attracts funding and support by the local research network and gives you a lot of kudos as well, I have to say. So another reason to engage
join the BACCN,
join the BACCN and apply for the funding that we actually have available. Obviously, it's on a competitive basis, but if you aren't in it, you can't get it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Suzanne. So I'm going to hand that over to our lovely chair, Nikki, which is going to talk about our clinical vignette and case study abstract category. Nikki.
So thank you, Karen. So again, a new category, again, a really, really exciting category, and kind of follows on quite a lot from what Louise said, that this is something that every single person that attends our conference would be able to potentially put in an abstract for. So it's about thinking about a particular case that we may have had in relation to a patient, in relation to a patient journey that you've been involved with, a patient that was potentially on a ward and following that journey through to an intensive care admission. It might be a really positive example of a really strong clinical assessment and examination and subsequent diagnosis of the patient. Or it might be a situation where the patient wasn't diagnosed very quickly and that had a potential knock-on effect clinically. So it's about what learning can we get from that. So in terms of the abstract, so we need to think about what are our objectives? What do we want our audience to learn? So we need to think about three particular learning objectives. And learning objectives are or should really state what the individual will learn if they choose to either look at your poster or come to a session. So what are objectives? So objectives need to be something that the observer can do. So they begin with verbs, the doing words. What can we do? What can we assess? What can we recognize? What can we diagnose? How can we treat? How can we distinguish different types of diagnosis, different types of assessment? How can we manage particular patients in particular situations with particular conditions? And again, like Karen mentioned earlier, we can link these to CC3N competencies. So again, that can link to your revalidation. It can help other members of the audience to be able to achieve some of their competencies, give them pathways towards where they can identify information which may help them in that particular area. So in terms of what do we mean by a clinical vignette or a case report, so like we've already said, there will be lots of people that come to conference that are either already or have just finished doing their degree, doing a master's qualification, doing a PhD qualification, and it may be that a case study has been part of that period of education. So taking a particular example from practice, so I know an example that I had from practice that I did a piece of work around was looking at necrotizing fasciitis. Mm-hmm. It was a patient that was admitted into an A&E department. The necrotizing fasciitis wasn't diagnosed on admission. The patient went to a general medical ward and deteriorated over a period of time. And there was a missed opportunity for diagnosing. that particular condition. And so we look at the evidence around that. So what was the assessment? What was the history taken? What was the physical examination? What investigations were done? What could we have done? What does the evidence suggest? What's best practice? And how can we use all of that information to influence how we look after the next patient, for my example, that is admitted with necrotizing fasciitis? So it's a really nice, practical way of being able to give our knowledge of our particular groups of patients to other members in the audience, because we've all got something to learn from each other, be that a very newly qualified Band 5 staff nurse, all the way up to a Band 8 or 9 senior charge nurse. So it's a really exciting, interesting, innovative, different way to present at a conference.
And I think also, you know, a lot of us work in general intensive care. So it might be if you're working in more specific intensive care, so in neuro or in cardiac burns and things, that you can share a case to us more generalists and vice versa. So it's a great way of sharing the group of patients we're looking after.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can see Suzanne's hands up.
Muted, Suzanne.
Sorry, just a question really. it's probably better than muted, but anyway. Thinking about writing an abstract for it and presenting that, would you recommend that people use a reflective model or framework for presenting this case and what they've learned and what they would suggest going forward?
I certainly think that's a really useful way to approach this. I think the difficulty sometimes with reflective frameworks is that the writer tends to focus on the what rather than the why, the how, and the evidence that supports some of those discussions. So absolutely, it gives some structure to the abstract and then some structure to the actual piece of work at the end. But just think about, we don't want lots and lots of information about what actually happened. What we want to know is, what difference is it going to make? How is that going to influence our management of patients in that particular situation or with that particular condition in the future? Yeah. Just think a little bit about less discussion, more critical analysis and evaluation.
I mean, less description, I presume.
Description, sorry.
Yeah. I think we've, when we revamped the abstract submission categories last year, I think you, as scientific committee, you did a really good job at, like Suzanne said earlier on, under each heading, we've tried to make it really clear as in what we want you to focus on under that heading. So it's given you a lot more guidance as in how to write. And we tried to make it specific to that abstract category you're putting it in. So hopefully when you submit a clinical vignette or a case report, there's quite good pointers to what we're looking for when you're writing that abstract.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you write a case study for a piece of education or for your own reflective practice in terms of your revalidation, for example, the question you always need to be asking yourself is why. So why did this happen in this way? Why have we behaved like this? Why have we treated this patient like this? Why is the outcome like this? And if you keep that thought in your back of your head all of the time, that stops you from writing really descriptively and encourages you to start to think about, so what? So why is anybody going to want to listen to this? They don't want to listen to a story. They want to know, right, okay, then, so what can we do about it? How can we make this better for our patients?
Yeah. So again, I'm very excited. I don't think if I remember correctly, we didn't have any case studies.
No.
Or anything. I don't think anybody took us up in 2019. No. So I'm hopefully 2020. Anne.
Yeah, and just to remind people that the journal's always interested in case studies as well. So it's something you could present at conference and then write up and try and get published in the journal.
Yeah. And there's certainly a very well established, if anybody has done ACP or ACCP kind of work, there's a very well established format in terms of how you write up a case study. And I think that's often where we got most of our guidance from for the subheadings when you're writing the abstract. So hopefully, Nikki, people will take us up.
Fingers crossed
for the 2020 conference, and we'll get some good clinical vignettes and case studies. And so I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you very much. I've gone to Catherine.
I've just got some very basic points that covers all of these topics. Just be sure, number one, that the topic that you're going to submit your abstract for is right for this conference. Remember, we are the BACCN nursing conference, so make sure your topic fits that. Number two, ensure that you know what type of abstract you're submitting to. For example, a workshop is a workshop. It's not an hour's lecture on any particular topic. So make sure you do the right things. Give yourself time to write it. Don't wait till 11 o'clock the night after it's due to run it. So give yourself time. Do it as a Word document first of all.
Yeah.
Know you get your word count right, and then you can cut and paste it into the website for us. Be sure your spelling's correct.
Yeah.
Make sure your word count is correct, because you will just get cut off halfway through a sentence if you're not careful. Make sure your grammar's correct. And make sure that you have the references if that's what's required within the abstract that you're putting into. And I think we're only allowed three references, so we don't want a list of 10,000. We just want the three key ones that meet your topic. They're all things that are really important as reviewers. There's nothing more irritating, maybe that's not the right word, if you're on 150 abstracts and the spelling is wrong in 50% of them. Thank you.
Yeah, now that's really important point, Catherine. Like I say, when you're reading 150 abstracts, and that's how the difference between getting accepted to conference versus your abstract being thrown out is things like your spelling, your references, the word count. And I know for a fact we've changed the submission boxes, and like Catherine said, you will get cut off at 300. How you split that 300 across the different subheadings is up to you, but you will get cut off at 300, and then when we read your abstract, you're halfway done and we can't see it and we can't put that through. So you might get a comment from us to say, actually, this looks interesting, but you might have to rewrite this before we would accept this. Suzanne, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, it was just really something to say about the title that you choose for your abstract as well, almost regardless of what submission you're putting in. I think sometimes people try to be too creative with their title, and it actually does not tell anybody what the work is actually about. And I think that's true for journal articles as well sometimes now, and quite often they get rejected for that. So do make sure that your title is short, it's concise, but it also tells us what the content is, and the content in terms of the subject area, but also the design as well. So a really good title, for example, if you're doing some research around eye masks and sleep, it might say, the use of eye masks to improve sleep in ICU, comma, a review of the literature, or a cohort study, or a service evaluation. So that's short to the point, but it does exactly say what it is. Sometimes if you try and be too clever and too creative, it doesn't work out.
I think we've actually set a limit. I think it's a 10-word limit to the title.
They say a good title should never be more than 12 words. So yeah. 10 words is fine. But I think it's about the content in that title as well. You know, you can say something really abstract, and then we think, no idea what this means.
And that's what gets people into your session when you're presenting at conference. I think, Nikki, did you have your hand up? Yeah.
Just kind of a final comment, I guess, from me, in that don't be scared of putting an abstract in. Don't be scared of speaking for the first time at conference. I seem to chair a lot of sessions for our 2019 conference from first-time speakers. and there were some absolutely fantastic pieces of work presented. So don't let it put you off. I know, I can remember when I did my very first conference and I was beyond terrified. I can remember actually physically shaking before I did the session. And it's ridiculous. And once you've done one, all of a sudden you think, actually, that wasn't anywhere near as hard as I thought it was going to be. And then you'll do another one and another one and another one and get involved in more projects and do more things and realise just how exciting this can start to be. So my absolute top tip would be just shut your eyes, write it and go for it.
Go for it. Catherine.
But not just that. We do have the option of having posters as well.
Yeah.
And if you and with our posters, you have a, I think it's a 4 or 5 minute short, very, very short presentation. That's a nice way of breaking into that conference arena as well to see how things go. So don't forget posters. And sometimes they're actually sometimes harder to do, but actually it's one way around if you're really worried about standing up and talking for 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah. I think the other really nice thing about submitting an abstract for a poster as well is that actually you can use it back in your own practice area as well. I mean, obviously we use electronic posters, but you've designed it, it's all there, and quite often the trust will cover the cost of printing. It doesn't cost very much to print the poster, and then you can have it displayed in your unit for other people to see. So I think it's got a legacy as of the work as well. So that's another reason why sometimes it's nice to do a poster.
Yeah, I think it breaks my heart that all these nurses that do the ICU course, majority of them have to do a poster as part of their final mark, and they don't share those posters. And some of this fantastic work that's going on out there, and they don't share it. And this is the perfect opportunity and platform to share your work. And if you're worried about presenting, the people come to listen to you. You're the expert for that 20 minutes in the topic you're talking about. And so people want to hear from you. They want to learn from your experience. So I would just, like Nikki say, just go for it. Submit an abstract. There's lots of help out there. You know, we've got a fantastic scientific committee that's more than happy to help. And if we are approached and asked, and help to first-time presenters, because most of the scientific committee will be chairing these sessions. And we really try and support people through. We're a very supportive committee and conference team. So please, I would urge you to submit an abstract and go for it. Anything else from my lovely scientific committee?
No, thank you.
No. So I'm just going to wrap up and say thank you very much to you guys for taking time to go through all our abstracts. It's invaluable advice that you've given them, and we're really looking forward to seeing the abstracts. Just to say that abstract submission is open. This is the earliest we've ever been open. You've got till the 31st of March to submit abstracts. Please put it in, go to the BACCN website. Our conference link is on there. Registration is open, abstract submission is open. And we're really looking forward to see your abstracts over Easter. We'll be going through abstracts, and we'll try and get it out to you, or the results back out to you, as early as possible so that you can get on and make arrangements. But like I say, conference is open. We're open for business. And we're really looking forward to Nottingham 2020, when we're going to celebrate the year of the nurse, Florence Nightingale's 200th anniversary. It's going to be a fantastic conference. So final way from my scientific committee, thank you very much, guys. And I'm just going to say, watch the space. We're going to do a similar talk later on in the year. So once your abstracts were submitted, about how do you put your presentation together, whether that's a poster, an oral presentation, or a workshop, when you get down to the nitty-gritty of coming to present a conference. So watch the space, and looking forward to see you in 2020. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.